Not ready? Too bad. Head back, face forward, and hold on like you mean it.
Hello and welcome to Review Time's Theme Podcast. This is a weekly show where we discuss all the ins and outs of attractions and parks from around the world. My name is Luke and I will be your host today as we explore one of Japan's greatest theme parks and arguably the best Universal park in the world, Universal Studios Japan in Osaka. Joining me as always is the man who thought his life was good until he got a Universal remote. Then that changed everything. It's my Review Time co-host, Dominic Lacey.
Are we going off the Universal remote as in, like, the Click movie? Do you remember that movie with Adam Sandler? Yeah. Which was
how
like,
could
hey,
I forget the greatest film ever made?
It was literally just like, hey, this is a comedy. And then at the end, it's like, hey, you want a comedy? Here's depression.
Yeah. I've been rewatching Futurama at the moment now that's on Disney Plus here.
Mm.
And there's a lot of episodes where I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot how really sad this episode is.
Like, can I also
the dog episode, bloody, like, there's so many. The brother episode, I was like, I forgot about this one.
Futurama is one of those ones that really hits you. Scrubs as well is another one. But yeah, I just remember just Click just being like, help, I did not sign up for this.
Doesn't he have like an existential crisis at the end, just accepts his life is a failure or something? Like,
he accepts that because he keeps on skipping to the most successful parts of his life that he's missing out on the journey. The whole premise of the movie is it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, because he keeps on skipping stuff and then he dies.
Wait, is Click and Soul the same movie?
Yes.
Because that's the ending of Soul as well. Wow, there you go. If you've seen one, you don't need to see the other. Exactly the same otherwise. No differences at all.
Can I also quickly point out that we are specifically this week doing an episode on Universal Studios Japan so that we don't have to talk about Disney. And 1 minute into this, we've talked about Disney twice.
Wait, when did we talk about? Oh, just Soul.
Disney Plus and Soul.
Yeah, that's just a shout out. We can't not talk about Disney, but we're not going to talk about them anymore because they've made us angry lately.
Mm.
I'm sure we'll do a future episode where we just roast Disney for 2.5 hours with all their terrible decisions lately. But we're doing Universal. As I said at the top of the episode, I've been lucky enough to go to every Universal park except for Singapore.
Mm.
And for the individual park, I would say this is the strongest.
Yeah, I haven't been to Universal Studios Florida. Are there any others? There's Hollywood, Florida, Osaka, and Singapore.
Yeah, Beijing looks like it's ready to open, but it hasn't opened officially yet. So I can still say there's only one I'm missing. It should open, I'd say, sometime later this year. For me, Universal Orlando, if you kind of cheat, I would say it's the best. Because the parks are so close together, you can just treat them as one, and they've got a ride that goes between the two. If you treat those two parks as one because you have an AP or a park hopper, sure, that's a better resort, that's a better theme park. But for just a one single park, it almost seems to be, hey, take the best bits from Islands of Adventure, take the best bits from Universal Studios, smash them together. Okay, this is Universal Studios Japan.
Yeah, that's the thing that we'll get into about this theme park is that for a single park, they could have very easily turned this into two different experiences. Like the additions that they've added, I think they would have justified a second gate, but they just keep on stacking more things on to the single gate.
I just think they don't have the space.
Mm.
If you look at it's quite landlocked, and it's got this weird thing where, like, within the park, you can see just like a giant bridge, which is a road. You can see completely to the outside world. It's not, you know, super. I think Harry Potter's quite immersive.
Mm.
Some sections of Jurassic Park are quite immersive. But then, yeah, other parts of the park, you can clearly see the outside. They're not trying to hide it.
I find that pretty cool about this park as well, because I think when you're in the studio parts of this theme park, and there are various areas that I think are meant to be more immersive than others, as you were saying, Harry Potter, and we'll go through all of the different additions as we go through this possible 10-parter series, because it is a theme park, and we've managed to make smaller theme parks into longer episodes somehow. But it is one of those cool things that as you're going through the studio parts, the background of Osaka, for those that don't know, Universal Studios in Japan, it's not in Tokyo, it's in Osaka, which is like a three-hour bullet train ride away.
Yeah.
But the background of that city fits thematically with the sort of studio aspect of the park. And I think it actually adds to it. It makes it feel really alive.
And I think, I don't know if we've ever talked about it on the pod, but we'll quickly talk about our experience, times that we've been to this park. So we've both been twice, once together and once with our respective partners. So your first time was 2015?
Yes. So I went shortly after. This was like a Japan trip after I lived in Hong Kong. We went to Tokyo Disneyland, Disney Sea, and we also went down to Universal Osaka because we were traveling through. We went sort of from the top to the bottom. We traveled through to Hiroshima and all of that. But we stopped by Osaka, did a day at Universal Studios, and I will say that it was very different from 2015 to 2017 when I went there with you.
Yeah, so the time we went together was mid-2017, so around July. There was a completely new attraction in that 2 years since you were there. Back to the Future, the ride had been replaced with Despicable Me, Minion Mayhem. So we went there for just one day. Whirlwind trip. We literally landed in Tokyo, got through all you know, international flights.
Oh, I remember
went to
this.
Tokyo. We got a train from the airport straight to Tokyo Station, jumped on a bullet train at Tokyo straight to Osaka, got to Osaka at, 11 p.m. at night, walked. Our Airbnb was, right next to the park, but at the very back of it. So we walked all the way around the park to get to our Airbnb, literally slept. I think we went to 7-Eleven for dinner and just got some snacks.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Slept. Literally that Airbnb we had for one night. We slept. We went, took all our bags with us to Universal Studios Japan, did a day there. As soon as the park was closed, we were back on a train to Tokyo. We were literally in Osaka for less than 24 hours the day we did Universal. I don't recommend that.
No.
It's a lot of travel. And I learned that. So this, I went again in 2018 with my girlfriend, and we stayed on site at the hotel is called something. We had a Minions overlay at one point, but our room didn't. Had an awesome view of the park. There's a few shots on our review of Universal Japan where it's a really nice essentially aerial view of the park. That's actually just from my hotel room. And we were there for three nights. So we were able to do Osaka Castle one day in the daytime. So I think we might have even been there for four nights. We did Osaka Castle and the city of Osaka for one day. And then we had a ticket that was only given to international guests, which to me was the perfect way to do it. It was a 1.5 day ticket. So we got in on the first day after 3 p.m., and then you could go the second day for the entire operating day. So in those 2 days, it was a perfect time to get some re-rides. We did the rides, the really good stuff we wanted to do, we'd already done by the first day. So the second day was all about re-riding those attractions we wanted to do again, experiencing the things that the smaller stuff you wouldn't get to do if you only had one day at the park.
Yeah. Do you remember how late the park was open till when you got in at 3 p.m.?
So we were there, we'll talk about it a little later, but they just debuted their new nighttime parade the summer we were there, only a few weeks earlier. So I believe the park was kind of open till 10, 11 at night, which doesn't sound like much, but that's late for a theme park. And then it's kind of open 8, 9 in the morning. So the first day, 7 hours in the park. The second day, we left a little bit early because we also, after that day, we went to Tokyo. But we didn't leave early because we felt we had to. We left early because we were satisfied with how much we'd done. I think we left the park at, 6 o'clock in the night.
I think that's the thing that a lot of people get confused about with Universal Osaka. And we sort of fell into the same trap in which we looked at it and went, oh, well, it's a single theme park and it's a Universal theme park. And your experience and our experience when just looking into those is, Universal Studios Hollywood and to a degree Universal Studios Singapore, all of the sort of singular theme park resorts you think that you can smash them all out in a day. But I think, as you said, you know, 1.5 days is perfect for this park because there are a lot of things, like it has a lot of attractions and there's a lot to do. And it even has, like when we went there, there was that mixture of nighttime entertainment. They had a Harry Potter show in 2017, which was like themed around.
Yeah, the projection.
It was like Christmas or something. I don't really remember what happened, but it was like they scared off Dementors and then the castle lit up.
Yeah,
it
was like puppet Dementors almost, like on sticks. It was like Dementors on sticks. Yeah. I would say this Harry Potter is probably the best. I can say I've done all of the Harry Potter lands in the world. So that's one thing. And I would say this one's probably the best thematically of the originals just because it has that lake, the Black Lake there. And that's like a really nice area to just sit back and relax. I would say maybe, you know, some people would say Orlando's better now that it has Hagrid, but you won't see a velociraptor themed coaster whizzing past you here at this one. So I would still argue that Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Japan is the best. It's also about a 10-minute walk from the park for some reason.
Yeah, it is a huge amount away. And I guess, do we just want to, where do we want to start with this experience?
Because we at the entrance, I feel. Best place to start. As always, this, the entrance area here, and then there's a few other areas at the park, are pretty much carbon copies of Universal Studios Florida at this point.
Yeah.
So you enter into a Hollywood-themed land and picture in your mind Universal Studios Hollywood, where you've got those themed buildings kind of as you enter, a few of them.
The big cream warehouses.
The few themed buildings make way the further you get down this Hollywood-themed area to just cream generic soundstage type buildings.
Yeah.
But this land has like, just this singular land has like four or five attractions or something ridiculous for the size that it is.
Well, this is one of the strange ones because something that we will have to talk about, and I'm not sure if there was anything when you went back there in 2018, but when I went in 2015, this is sort of, imagine your Main Street, but it has not just a couple of permanent additions, it's also got this huge flex area, which is usually themed to like various Japanese pop culture things. So when I was there in 2015, right as you go in at the front, you go under the other undercover area, there's a couple of shops and that, you take a left and there was a huge Monster Hunter sort of addition that was celebrating the new game that just came out. Like they had this massive animatronic that had projections all over it. It was crazy and it was just temporary. I know I've seen an Attack on Titan one. They had some Gundam stuff there as
I believe the time I was there, the second time, it was home to a Sesame Street themed show where they'd spray you with water and bubbles.
Lucky!
The best that it could have been, but yeah, this area, you walk in and you're kind of overwhelmed. Mm. Over the entrance is also a roller coaster, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a big thing. As you were saying, there's a cover over this first kind of entrance area of the park as well, which is a big thing in these Japanese parks. Helps with snow, helps with rain, helps on a hot day as well, sort of thing. I would say it's not as nice and ornate as the Tokyo Disneyland roof, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's nicer than some other parks' roofs.
It's just a canopy, like, at the end of the day. Like, I don't give this sort of, this front area gets a lot of leeway for me because it is just, hey, Hollywood sound stages. So it's more about the, you know, you don't get excited because you're like, whoa, huge theming. You're more excited in this park because it's like there's a huge roller coaster and all of these flexible non-permanent additions and some space fantasy ride, which we've actually done a podcast on.
Yeah. But we'll start it looking at the maps here. We'll start at that roller coaster because on most maps, Hollywood Dream the Ride, as it is called, is marked as both attraction 2 and 3. And that's because this is two attractions, in theory. It only counts as one coaster credit, but they run three trains. Two of the trains face forward, one of the trains faces backwards, and it's a completely separate queue, name of the attraction and everything if you want to ride the backwards one. You know, it's not just a 1 in 3 chance. It's Hollywood Dream the Ride is the front-facing one. and Hollywood Dream the Ride backdrop is the backwards facing one. And as you could probably assume, if there's twice as many trains, it usually has twice the weight, the backdrop one, compared to the front one.
Yeah, so this is, though we've both experienced this, where oftentimes this has a ridiculous wait timer. It'll be like, this is a 90-minute wait minimum, and you get in, and usually it's only like 20, 30 minutes. I don't know why it's always been so heavily inflated, but this is a really good coaster.
Yeah, so I've been, you've never done backdrop, right?
No. And I will say that when we went in our 2017 trip, I got a bit more of a tum, and I'm a little round man, and they had to like jump on the seat to click it in.
They had to take us backstage to the test seat, essentially.
Mm.
And the woman was like, she's like, you got to pull it down more. Rather than put us in the queue, they essentially took us to the side to see if you'd fit. Like,
yeah.
And it was fine. We did.
It's not designed for Westerners.
Yeah. So it's a B&M ride. It doesn't really. It's just a nice B&M coaster, essentially. No inversions. Yeah. It does have, similar to Rip Ride Rocket at Universal Orlando, it has the pick your own track sort of thing. But if I remember, it's like there's maybe one or two Western tracks and the rest are kind of J-pop or Japanese. So I think there was like a Michael Jackson track.
Yeah.
And then there was one other in English. And I think, I rode backwards to Michael Jackson. I can't remember what I listened to forwards the times I've ridden.
I think that there's like, I have a vague memory of like an AC/DC sort of like, dun, dun,
yeah, dun, like a rock.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, sort of just like really hardcore. And it, for the most part, they don't really fit. But it's kind of cool
similar
still.
To the Rip Ride Rocket, where it's like, this is neat. some of them, it's not like Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, where the attraction is very synced with the audio, the music that you get. It just kind of like, it might line up, it might not, depending what track you get. But yeah, it's just a nice coaster. I would say if you're there, as we're saying, sometime, we're not going to promise. We noticed this across a lot of the park, though, that they kind of would overinflate their wait times. I'm not sure if it was a sneaky way to try to push Express Pass, which is available in this park in some weird way where it's not really unlimited. You get like X amount of attractions and they come in specific packages and you can't separate. So your package might come with, you know, Hollywood Dream the Ride, Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, Jurassic Park, and Despicable Me Mini Mayhem or something. And you won't be able to change Mini Mayhem for something you'd prefer. That sort of thing. We didn't need it, I felt.
I didn't mean the times I went.
Time. Yeah, and the time that me and you went wasn't crazy busy, but it was insane compared to when I went the next year, which was dead, because Hollywood Dream the Ride was advertised as a 20-minute wait.
Ooh.
And Backdrop was advertised as a 40-minute wait, when we're like, oh, 40 minutes, yeah, that's worth it. This is usually 90 minutes plus. It was 20 minutes for Backdrop and 10 minutes for Hollywood Dream the Ride.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wait more. Like, I think Backdrop is a much better version of the attraction just because it's so unique. There's not a lot of coasters you can ride backwards around the world, especially from front, like forwards and backwards. Look, if you can do both, awesome.
You
but I
can.
Wouldn't wait more than 40. I wouldn't wait more than an hour for Backdrop if the frontwards one is 30 minutes or whatever.
You can do all rides backwards if you're willing to sort of like straddle the seat.
It's just like, whatever.
Imagine
nothing wrong here.
DC Rivals, where you're like straddled, so they push it down on your back. So I feel like you'd have bend your legs in a really weird way
welcome.
I feel as well this is one of those attractions, because it is right at the front of the park, it does make sense to overinflate the wait time, especially in the earlier parts of the day, because you want to try and push people out. Like, imagine if everyone goes there. This is sort of the... the attraction that you can see as you're going into the theme park. So it makes for a really good visual weenie. And you'd be like, oh, let's go do that first. You're walking straight past away. And it's like, oh, it's 10 minutes into the day. That's going to be a 2-hour wait. We'll just go do something
else. I'll come
else.
Back. Yeah,
similar
exactly.
to Harry Potter. I noticed the same thing when I did Harry Potter, which is sort of around the corner, is when we did that first thing in the morning, it said that it was like a 2-hour wait. And I will say they had the entire extended queue open, but we never stopped. We just kept on walking.
Moving,
like we went around the outside. We went through the greenhouse area. That's when you know it's a big day. But from there, it was just like walk. Just keep walking.
And it is a good queue. Like Harry Potter, Forbidden Journey, as much as I'm not the biggest fan of that attraction, the queue's really good, so even if an hour wait for Forbidden Journey is kind of worth it, but once you start getting into the greenhouse, that's when it's like, okay, this is just switchbacks now. It's not the well-themed internal queue, which it's actually worth waiting in.
It just keeps going as well. Yeah. we'll talk about that later, though.
Yeah. Next major ride, we've already talked about it. We've already done a whole episode on it if you're interested in it, but that's Space Fantasy, the ride. It replaced E.T. here. I would say it's a better E.T. replacement coaster than The Mummy at Universal Hollywood, which is also replaced E.T. at that park and is a coaster. This is kind of an indoor... Well, I've never experienced the base version. I've experienced two overlays of it. You've experienced the base version, right?
I've experienced two versions. The base version just sort of being... the standard theme of you've got to get the sun sprites into the sun so the universe doesn't explode does not come across in the visuals at all, I will tell you that.
You know, just the normal theme for a coaster. No IP. It's just its own thing. It's its own IP.
But then
which
we
so
went
far,
there.
Two attractions, no IPs.
Mm.
That's going to change very quickly because they're pretty much the only two non-IP attractions. But two attractions, no IPs.
Should we talk about as well sort of closer towards the front of the park? We will also be very transparent in saying that it is very hard to find an English version of this map. So we are working off like a really sort of...
A few different versions almost.
Yeah, so some of the names are a bit wonky and some things are different. So we won't go into huge depth like we usually do, like with our Hong Kong Disneyland one where we went through and talked about like every single restaurant and that. We're going to mostly talk about the main stuff. Something I do want to talk about is that whilst we were both there, they had Dragon Quest The Real Experience, which was Kinect sort of
real
thing.
It was the longest wait I believe we had of that entire trip almost. It was over an hour and 20 minutes almost, I want to say. We did it quite late in the day where we felt satisfied we'd done pretty much everything else major.
Yeah.
But it was like, I guess as it explained, Dragon Quest The Real, it was in the flex space that they have near the front of the park. You got given like a sword and then you'd walk in and there'd be either like giant statues / animatronics or like a video screen of a character from Dragon Quest. And you would have to hit this like button, essentially this big button with your sword, and that would do damage to the character on the screen. But it was in groups of like four or five. So we just got put with other guests. We were clearly, I think, probably the only English speakers who'd gone through it on that day.
Yeah.
And we must have looked so flustered, but
we
it was
just
fun.
Like, whack,
like,
whack.
I could only imagine how fun that would have been if you spoke the language, because it was a lot of fun and super unique. So I'm glad we did it, even though we didn't really understand it.
It was basically like a real life RPG. Imagine like a mixture of an escape room with augmented reality with an RPG. It was very neat. Like it was just one of those things that you don't often get. I know a lot of UK parks seem to do this. I always see things like, what's the name of that theme park that has the Smiler?
Thorpe?
No.
Alton
Towers. I was going to call it Amity Isles, but because I'm looking at Amity Village. Alton Towers has an experience at the moment that's themed to Black Mirror. Like it has these flexible spaces.
That's not Alton. That's Thorpe, I'm pretty sure.
Wow. I'm the worst. I swear it was like,
it's a Black Mirror The Labyrinth, it's called.
Yeah. And it's only temporary, but our parks don't do it. The Australian theme parks almost never have temporary things unless it's maybe like a temporary show. They used to.
Was that like Harry Potter thing for, remember that Harry Potter and the Matrix?
And the Matrix.
Yeah. I guess the closest thing they've had recently is at Movie World, they have the showcase, the studio showcase, where they just kind of show. But that's closed at the moment, permanently.
Kind of boring. And there's
it's literally like, here's costumes from three movies you don't really care about. Okay, thanks. Yeah. But yeah, that at the entrance as well is unique. There's always, I think a lot of Japanese parks, especially the Disney's and Universal, pretty much have rolling celebrations.
Yeah.
And I believe it's to keep bringing in the APs, keep bringing out new merchandise, new food to keep the expenditure high. But it pretty much means anytime you go through the year, there's going to be something special. The other big thing that was when, well, we may as well quickly talk about it now while we remember. Do you remember the One Piece show?
Oh, yeah. So it was like blasting people with water? Yeah.
So it was, I can't even remember what it's called. It was like a One Piece summer blast or something like that. Where literally the characters from One Piece would just come up on a stage and drench guests with hoses and buckets. And like, they were all for it. All the
guests. I think the correct term was annihilate the guests. Like,
They were cheering like, woohoo, it was hot. It was the middle of summer, but it wasn't that hot for me. Like, I didn't want to go stand in the middle of this.
Yeah.
But it was just randomly like off to the side of the Waterworld theater for some reason. It was really strange. But those were just two temporary things that happened to be there when we were there. The year after when I went back, the One Piece show was there. There was a temporary 4D version, VR version of Space Fantasy, the ride. There's always something. I think it was themed to Evangelion, the only VR coaster I've ever done. Interestingly, Space Fantasy, the ride, is a spinning coaster.
Mm.
They actually locked it, so it was just purely facing forward. You could only face forward. So it absolutely annihilated the capacity because half of the trains are facing backwards were completely out of action.
Oh, wow.
So it would halve the ride, theoretical ride capacity.
Jeez.
Lucky it was quiet insane. When we were there. I think it was still a 40-minute wait, which is probably the longest we've waited. So we were lucky.
Yeah, it's usually like a 10-minute wait when we've done it before.
Also in this land, I don't think I've done it, but apparently it's there. It's Shrek. But I'm pretty sure when we were there, the Shrek theater was replaced, if I remember, with a Sailor Moon 4D show?
I can't even remember where this could be, because I can see that there is like a...
As you enter. So it has like a really nice facade, like a theater, a classic theater facade with the kind of wraparound with the lettering. And I think it was some form of Sailor Moon attraction or something like that when we were there last.
Yeah, it's called like Cinema 4D, but it's not an attraction per se. They've just got it like labeled on the map.
Yeah,
maybe that's why we just
rotates.
Sort of ignored
it. It used to be Shrek, and now it just kind of is rotating with whatever is there at like whatever's popular at the time or whatever temp show they've got.
Yeah,
we didn't see it when we were there, so I don't have an experience. One other thing that is in there that was only there when I was there the second time. It wasn't there when we were there together. There was a Curious George show.
Oh.
It was kind of cool. It was a Curious George show where it was essentially a Pepper's Ghost. The whole show was Pepper's Ghost. With the, you know, the man in yellow in Curious George? He was a physical actor. And then Curious George was Pepper's ghost projected on it like a piece of glass at the front. But the interaction between the Curious George and like the sets was all practical. So Curious George would like jump into a filing cabinet and the filing cabinet would come out and then paper would start being thrown out of the filing cabinet as like a practical effect.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I didn't, like, it was like that thing where I was like, this is cool. Kids would love this sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you can appreciate it, even though you're not the audience dedicated for it, so you can just imagine how good people who it's made for would probably think that it is.
Vaguely remember when we were there, there was also like this big warehouse that we sort of walked in and then immediately walked out of. And it was just kind of like parade floats, just immobilized.
I think.
Like Sesame Street or something?
Yeah, I think that was, it's the animation, it was called like the something animation, magic of animation or something.
Yeah.
And that is the, nowadays, the Curious George is part of that, but it's like a theater. And then, yeah, it's just got, you can draw some characters and they've got some big displays in there sort of thing.
The other thing I really remember in this opening land, and we're sort of getting to the end of this Main Street sort of Hollywood area, but I remember we also saw the Monsters review, or it was like the Monsters on Stage.
The Universal Monsters Live Rock and Roll Show.
Ah, that's
which, if you're not familiar, it may not sound familiar, but it's essentially Beetlejuice's Graveyard Review.
Pretty much.
which is, I've said it before, probably my favorite Universal Studios theme park show of all time. And it is just a spectacular show. This one is, if you think of Universal Studios Orlando, where the monster makeup show is, you go into that theater and it's tiny. It seats like a couple of hundred people. Has the exact same facade as that theater, but it's like a full, probably 1,500 seat theater.
Yeah, this was huge, and it was full.
Like, yeah. So when I don't know how long we waited when we were there, but I remember waiting like 40 minutes when I was there the second time to get a good seat. And yeah, I reckon if you weren't there, even though it was a relatively quiet day, if you weren't there kind of 25 minutes before the show started, at least you're not getting in.
We went there, and I believe we went for the first show of the day.
Yeah.
And we sort of rocked up about an hour beforehand and there was no one really waiting around. And so we came back 30 minutes before it opened and that's when we jumped in line. And I remember having a pretty good spot. The bonus being is that even though I'm short for Australian, I'm relatively tall for the Japanese. So I can still see over everyone's heads.
Yeah, if you haven't seen either of these shows around the world, it's essentially the Universal Monsters singing music and Beetlejuice is the host. Here, this version, Beetlejuice speaks completely in Japanese, but all the singers are in English. So all the songs are still in English. And this is a slightly older version of the show than what was at Universal Orlando when it closed. So rather than having the Universal Orlando one used to have these like dance ghosts, this one kind of has like two cheerleaders. I can't remember. Their names are like Oops and Whoops or something weird. Like, but yeah, it's got, you know, Dracula, Frankenstein and his bride, Wolfman, and they just kind of rock out.
Yeah,
like, I love
this
show.
And they're all speaking English as well. They are Caucasian actors. Yeah. It was sort of Beetlejuice, similar to the shows at Hong Kong, where they'd kind of have like one character telling the story in Cantonese and Mandarin, the other characters telling it in English. This was very similar, where you could sort of gather the context from what the monsters were saying. So we had no idea what Beetlejuice was saying, and getting lots of laughs, but we were just like, ah, it's Beetlejuice.
If you know the show, like I'm knowing the other show, you can just kind of imagine the kind of just risque for theme park stuff he's probably getting away with, which is why I used to love this show so much. But yeah, this is I highly recommend air-conditioned theater. You can chill in the lobby for like, if you go early enough, they'll let you sit on the floor in the lobby.
Yeah.
And they kind of do this weird part of the lobby fills up as a queue and then they block that area off. So that's where we were the first time with Bobby and me when we went back. But with me and you, it was just like you kind of mingled around the lobby. And what happens is the people who are in that queue get first dibs of whatever seats they wanted in the auditorium. And then they'd let everyone else just fill in whatever was left. which is really different to most theaters where it's like, you must sit here, you know, fill all the way to the center of the row, keep on moving sort of thing. But yeah, that's the Hollywood area. And as you can probably tell already, there's a lot of attractions in this, just this entrance area of the land. But if you continue straight, so going down Hollywood Boulevard, you continue straight, you'll hit a New York themed area where they still have, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it's reopened yet since the pandemic, but hopefully it will reopen, the last surviving Terminator 2 3D attraction in the world.
Well, that's a theme of this park, is that when I went to this the first time, it's kind of starting to transition, but it has Terminator 3D, it's got Jaws, it had Back to the Future, it had all of the classics there. Now Back to the Future has been changed with Minions, like you said, but I haven't experienced Terminator 3D, except for in Japanese, and I still thought this was a... I could vaguely make out the show from what I had seen when I used to binge watch Tim Tracker, because he would go on this attraction all the time. So I could pick out sort of the story beats. There were some bits I didn't really understand. Like, apparently there's a backstory where it's meant to be a presentation of all of the technology. But
so you're at Cyberdyne Systems, if you haven't seen the show. So you're at least... And then at the start, there's this big kind of over-the-top woman who's like, hello and welcome. We're going to introduce you today to some of our new technology. And she's this like ridiculous over-the-top character, which always got a huge laugh in Florida. Like, the way she performed it was great. And then that's kind of your pre-show. They talk about, you know, wear your glasses. And then you go into the theater itself, which is kind of a 3D 4D cinema with practical effects that are really well woven into the show. So the woman who kind of introduces you to the pre-show starts up the presentation at the front of the theater, and then, you know, all these big kind of T-70s, I can't remember, they kind of come out, these big Terminator robots, and they do like a firing demonstration on these targets that come down from the roof.
Yeah.
And then all this stuff is happening. And then the coolest part, the big Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator, like, ride, you see him on a screen riding a motorbike, and then he like comes through the screen and he becomes real.
Yeah.
On a motorbike, like a motorbike flies through a screen into the auditorium.
It's got like a whooshy sort of effect, and then with this sort of like hole opens and heaps of smoke comes out, and it just like goes zoom. And they do that again at the end where he disappears as well.
Yeah,
very
cool.
He rides
into the screen, and then you're on this like kind of part where you're following him on a motorbike. And then the part I remember at the end is the T-1000.
Yeah.
Where they've got, and it's like this giant Terminator, the liquefying kind of thing. And then, you know, there's practical stuff happening that they have to do to stop the digital, you know, the fully digital character. And it's really cool. And then the lights go out, and then it does a good old dun 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 like the music.
Dun dun dun.
I think this is cool.
Like, yeah, it's very cool. The practical effects are awesome. The mixture, like, they say it's 3D, but really, it's 4D.
Yeah, there's the moving seats for one part of it, which scares you if you're not expecting it. From what I've heard, the new show that replaced this Stunt Spectacular or something at Universal Orlando is apparently even more spectacular. So I'm excited to eventually get to experience that.
Yeah.
But this holds a special place in my heart. I love T2 3D. Also, I feel I love attractions just because they used to be short waits all the time when I lived in Orlando. It pretty much meant that I would like this attraction more than anyone else could, because this is just like, you know, the Carousel of Progress or something, where it's like a no wait, 20 minutes in the AC.
Jump on in.
Yeah.
There's a couple of those here as well. Like, this park just has so many people eater attractions. Mm. Like, there's so many theaters. There's so many high capacity attractions. Yeah. It's just insane. Like, there are at least 2 big old boat rides. You know, you've got Jaws and Jurassic Park, yeah, the ride with just 8 people.
Just eat. Yeah. there's one other major attraction as well in New York. If you're thinking of Universal Orlando, which probably most of our people are familiar with, instead of having where the Revenge of the Mummy is, here they have Spider-Man, The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, the ride. The only version you've ever done of this ride, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite rides in the world.
Yeah. So you, I think we've talked about this in depth before.
I think it was one of our very, very first episodes, if I remember. It might have been like episode 2.
Yeah.
It was probably called the Review Time Podcast at that point. That shows you how long ago it was.
I'm trying to think, because I do remember talking about this in detail. But this is one of those, like, it's a spectacular dark ride. And I do want to point out that this is one of those dark rides that shows that if you use track well, you don't need trackless. Like, I feel like there's a huge push at the moment where it's like, oh, we've got to have trackless dark rides because it's, they're like just amazing. But it's also one of those things that if you don't use trackless effectively, then there's no point in having a trackless dark ride.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of parks lately where they're just making rides that could easily be trackless for the sake of it. And it's, they kind of lose what the point of a trackless ride system is. Where this one, because of the way you're placed high up on the way that the technology works, you're kind of on top of a motion platform as you go around. Mm. You can't see the track anyway. And this is one of the best rides in the world. So it shows that a track dark ride can be as spectacular, if not better, than some trackless dark rides.
100%. I'm just trying to think of, you know, Disney, I feel like, do the trackless dark rides well, but what's that Penguin trackless ride at SeaWorld?
Orlando. Yeah. It's Kingdom of Penguins or something like that. And it literally feels like, okay, this could have been tracked. This adds nothing to the experience. That was the first ever trackless dark ride I did.
Oh, you poor soul. And now Disney has like 3, I think.
They had none, remember? Yeah, they had none in the US. And then they opened, well, they were meant to open like 3 within a year or something. Because it was Star Wars, then Mickey Minnie's Runaway Railway, and then was meant to be Ratatouille.
Oh, but then Roller Licking Roadsters as well. That was the first use of Disney's trackless dark ride
in the US. What was the first use in Japan? Oh yeah, Pooh's Honey Hunt, one of the best dark rides in the world.
In 2001.
What was the first use in the US? Oh, it was like 2014 when they put in a ride that's better to watch than it is to actually ride.
That's what I hear from everyone. They're like, it is more exciting to be on the sidelines and watch the attraction than actually be on it. It is as if they just went, hey, you know that technology? Yeah, I like that technology. Let's just do something that no one's done, even though it doesn't have to be done.
It's kind of like, you know how Aquatopia, you get off and you're like, that was neat, I guess. Yeah. But then when you watch it from off, it looks really cool.
Yeah.
Like, it looks funner to off the ride than it actually is on the ride, especially if you ride during summer where they just demolish you for some reason. Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, one of the best rides in the world. From what I've heard, this version may not be long for this world.
Really?
Because I believe, I don't know if it's true, I've heard that they may only have a 20-year exclusivity contract for this version. It's not part of the same contract, apparently, that they signed in perpetuity in Orlando. It's 20 years this year, so if it mysteriously closes down at the end of the year, we might see what's coming. Rumors are pointing to something like Pokemon. Don't know how. You know, Pokemon in New York. That makes sense. But I, yeah, I don't know what's meant to happen there. Get on it while you can, if you can. I hope that it never leaves at Universal Orlando, though, because it is one of the best attractions in the world. Something quickly we didn't talk about. This park did open up in 2001, and within 1 year of operation, it got 1 million guests.
Oh.
Sorry, by 1 million, I meant 11 million guests.
Oh!
Meaning it was the fastest theme park in the world to reach 10 million guests.
That's insane. That's
yeah, but that's the highest numbers they've ever had.
Oh, so they haven't reached that again?
I think they might have again in like 2016. I'd need to double check. But I think Harry Potter may have been the one where they reached those numbers, but it opened to those numbers, and then for like 15 years or something, they never hit them again.
Jeez. I wonder if that was just people, like big theme park fans up from Tokyo coming down, and then they're like, cool, did that once, don't need to do it again.
Yeah, so from what I understand, I was doing some research into this for a while there. There was kind of these weird controversies that went down.
Oh.
And it kind of... It, like, turned people off it for it. If I remember, there was something about, like, fireworks, gunpowder. There was this story of where, like, they weren't meant to... They used more gunpowder than they should have in their fireworks and attractions. And that gave them a really bad publicity in environmental protection or something like that. So people swore off it for a while.
Was it one of those things which was really small, but was there like already sort of a bad vibe around the park at that?
And then Disney was probably like, oh, look at these idiots. They run them through the dirt.
Yeah. That's very similar to what happened with Wet n' Wild Sydney. Where Wet n' Wild Sydney opened up and everyone was like, oh, it's not a very good water park, but it's enough. And then it just took like one thing, and that was they had a New Year's Eve event, which like a couple of days before New Year's Eve, they were like, oh, actually, this is cancelled. And even though it was apparently organized through a third party or something like that, but Wet n' Wild Sydney took the flack and they did not recover from that.
No, they still haven't to this day. Yeah.
No, and it was just like, it shows that it just takes one slip on the banana peel. Yeah, if you've already sort of caused a bad sort of amount of grief in the community, and then it just spread like wildfire. Yeah, they looked at
for any reason to kind of destroy you, really. Like, that's it. That's all we need. Yeah, those are the kind of main two attractions in the New York area. They don't really have anything else. They don't really need anything else. There is a big, if you remember... A big kind of universal globe here that gets used as a stage. It kind of like opens up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I've never seen anything on the stage. I just know that it's there.
It's like a nice sort of open greenery, sort of flat astroturfy sort of area. Just somewhere to relax in front of the stage. But as you said, I've never seen anything here.
Never on it. Yeah, for sure. There's also a pizza place, I think, that we made. Did we eat there once? That's what I might have eaten there with Bobby, I'm not sure.
I think that was in San Francisco, which I will say, New York and San Francisco, they feel like one sort of area.
Yeah, well, which we may as well talk about San Fran here, because San Francisco's kind of been gimped a little bit, because San Francisco used to be home to Back to the Future, the ride as well, but it's been separated into now Minion Land that it is. So... San Francisco only has one attraction now, but again, it's the only place in the world you can experience this classic Universal Studios attraction, Backdraft.
This is, so I think we've mentioned this before on the podcast. I can't remember what the circumstances was, but we said that Backdraft is the best experience that you have to suffer through, because the first, like...
There's like three pre-shows.
Oh, and the first two-thirds of this attraction are so boring.
Yeah, and it's just someone talking to you like, backdrafts are very dangerous. When I was filming for the film Backdraft, we had to go through safety precautions just like the real backdrafts. Like, it's like, okay, same as Twister Ride It Out. Yeah. That was a very much the same where it's like, I just want to watch the cool part. I don't want to watch this boring talking part.
I would, like, every time we've written this, and, well, every time I've written this, it has been an unbelievably short wait. Like, you haven't had to really do anything.
The attraction's always been longer than the wait.
Yeah.
Every time I've been there. And that's because, to be fair, the attraction's about 4 minutes, but you have to watch 16 minutes of pre-shows to get to it.
Well, there's also that sort of, like, you go inside and then there's another pre-show that, like, it's this amazing set and you think, oh, here it comes. Yeah. And then it's just like a movie. Set? Yeah.
Yeah. So you go, the first pre-show's just kind of screens and you're like, oh, this is fair. And then you go to another one, it's like got a fire truck, full-size fire truck in there, some more sets, like prop lighting and stuff, and you're like, oh, someone's going to come out and talk. Oh, nope, it's just another video on a screen, which I do wonder why. It would be interesting to see them rework the experience to just be one pre-show, because it would be worth doing more than once in a day, in my opinion, if the pre-shows weren't so long, because the finale, which if you haven't experienced it, is a practical showcase of like fire effects.
Yeah. It goes through and it's kind of like Twister with fire. So you've got the thing where it starts off and they're all like, and action. And then they have the ominous music and a fire start sort of in a warehouse. And then it has the backdraft and that goes through and spreads throughout the warehouse. And there's explosions. There's barrels like flying across and exploding with water as well. So they sort of combine water and fire and explosions in this really interesting sort of way. And then they do a little cheeky at the end as well, where they have an explosion go off and the platform you're standing on drops.
Yeah.
And so it's you're like, just like, whoa.
It's like Terminator. They like to do little surprise, little spooks.
Little
like,
freak
gotcha,
outs.
Gotcha. I think the roof comes down as well at that same point.
Like that's when it buckles. Like collapses in,
so
pipes
you
come
seriously
down.
Feel like, well, this is it. This is the end times. Like,
I'm going to die
it's
here.
Terrifying.
At Universal Studios Japan.
I've done that attraction a number of times, and it still gets me every time, the finale. Oh, even though I'm, like, bracing for it, I know that it's coming.
You know.
But San Fran has kind of become the food now. There's a lot of dining options in this area. I remember getting, like, a Minion drink for some reason from here, even though it wasn't even in the Minion area. It was on the outside of the Minion area.
I vaguely remember getting a Minion thing here as well. And they had like lots of banana stuff.
Yeah. There was Minion waffles, bananas, mango, banana slushies or something with like bobas in them. But yeah, that kind of covers San Francisco. We'll talk about one more land today and then we'll leave the other half of the park for next week's episode. There's plenty of exciting stuff to talk about over there. Looking at it, it's probably more than half the park. We'll race through it if we need to. But the last thing is Minion Park, which is its own little land. It has two attractions and probably one of the busiest stores in this park because it's always jam-packed with people. I remember feeling claustrophobic walking through that store. And this was in the pre-COVID time, so I can only imagine what it'd feel like now.
This is one of those areas. So when I first went here, this was just an extension of sort of San Francisco and New York, which took you up to Back to the Future. And it was like the Institute of Science. It was where they were originally working on, where Doc Brown was working. So very similar to the experiences that you had all around the world. And it did the same thing where they just sort of swapped out Back to the Future with Minions, because Minions and sort of Simpsons use the same ride technology. A lot of the US parks, they have both.
The Minions attraction has used different pieces of tech depending where it is. So at Universal Orlando, it replaced the Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera, which was a different ride system where it's not a tiered kind of stadium with different motion platforms. They're just kind of on a floor, like a flat floor. And you can look around and see everyone else with you. So that's the ride film is exactly the same and it kind of has the same feel, but this one uses the same as the Simpsons or Back to the Future system where it's you feel more like you're the person experiencing it alone, not you've got a whole room full of people experiencing it with you. But I'll be honest, I haven't done Despicable Me Minion Mayhem at at Universal Japan.
Neither.
Because I've done it a couple of times. I have done it a couple of times at Universal Studios Orlando and once at Universal Studios Hollywood. I just don't think it's a great attraction. And because it was the newest thing there when we were there, it was like a 2-hour wait. And this I had waited 2 hours for that.
This is one of those classic things where I had done the Back to the Future version of this attraction, but when we had gone there, and I'm sure a lot of theme park fans, like if you're listening to this, you're probably fairly knowledgeable in theme parks, unless you're just a casual observer to the outside world of enthusiasts. But we did that classic thing where you were like, no, Dom, I have experienced this. We need not do it. Yeah. And I trusted you in your judgment, which looking at it definitely was true. But I always get concerned about that when going to parks. Like, what if there's someone who's a huge Minions fan, like deep down, I'm like, oh, I just love Minions. I just want to go on that. And then you're like, no, Tom.
See, this
not worth
not
it.
Not worth it.
Okay.
All right. All okay.
But they also have a flat ride in this section. And I didn't know if this was there when you were there. But it's kind of like a snow-themed ride where they've got this this device which is fired snow around and then the ride vehicles kind of spin around. Didn't go on it. Wait time was ridiculous again.
I don't remember that.
I can't even remember what it's called. It's something silly, swing around or like one of those type of names.
But
it's literally in the middle of that land. Like,
oh,
I don't know how they could have fit it there. And it pretty much there was no trace of it when we went in 2017. And then it was open in 2018. I was like, okay. Where did this come from? But yeah, Minion Park to me is the weakest land just because I don't really care for that ride or for Minions. But if you've got family, if you've got kids who do like the Minions, this will probably be their favorite land. They've also got, you know, the carnival games like in the movie where you knock down the alien, you can win the big squishy unicorn, like those sort of things. But it feels like a kind of afterthought of a land because it is just shoved up in the corner and you can tell it's been stolen from San Francisco, leaving Minion Park and San Francisco both feeling like half lands instead of full experiences.
So I feel like what they could have done with San Francisco is sort of take Backdraft and you can very easily manipulate it to sort of be like where it's Gru's workshop and he's testing out different sort of technologies. And maybe you could go the classic route where it's, oh no, something's gone wrong. And now the workshop is being destroyed. And then right at the end, when you're just about to get like shot by a laser or something, you can have it where he's like, ah ha ha, just kidding, I'm despicable. And then that's it.
Wow, Gru was really here. I feel they can't do that because then what about those? I feel half of the attractions in this park exist in San Francisco on the water there. Sorry, not attractions, I mean restaurants. I swear there's like three restaurants next to each other on that water where it looks over the bay there sort of thing.
There are so many restaurants there, but the only one I vividly remember is Mel's Diner because we wanted a burger.
Yeah, that sounds like us on that trip. This does sound like you, the man who ate the same burger twice in a day at Hong Kong Disneyland for lunch and dinner. But that kind of finishes this half of the park. So we've talked about Hollywood, New York, San Francisco, and Minion Land. Next week's show, I'll talk about the one thing we didn't talk about in these areas, but it kind of is its own thing. I'll talk about it next week. That is the Spectacular Night Parade. It's called like Universal Night Spectacular. Kind of goes through multiple lands, but it's great. We'll talk about that on the next episode, as well as Jurassic Park, Waterworld, Amity Village, and Universal Wonderland. We're not talking about Super Nintendo World because we haven't been to it.
What about Harry Potter?
Oh, yeah, Harry Potter. We got a lot to do on next week's episode, so make sure you don't miss it. But, Dom, of the stuff we talked about today, what's your favorite attraction?
Look, I'm going to throw it out there. I'm going to be a little bit edgy here. I still think it's Space Fantasy. I can't get over that attraction. It's just like, why do you exist?
To be fair, Space Fantasy would probably be my top five rides in this part of the park that we've talked about. So there we go, of the 10. For me, I would love to say Spider-Man the Ride, but as an English speaker, there's a better version of Spider-Man in the world at Universal Orlando. So I'm going to say either Hollywood Dream the Ride backdrop, if you're looking for something unique to this park,
yeah,
or a tie between T2 and Backdraft, just because it's still the only place you can experience these classic Universal-type attractions.
Fair.
But I would say my favorite kind of rides are in the upcoming lands.
Mm.
So make sure to tune in for those next week. But if you'd like to get in touch with us, tell us what you liked, what your favorite attraction, if you've been, is. Let us know. You can get in touch with me on Twitter at ReviewTimeLuke.
I'm at ReviewTimeDom.
You can get us both at Time Review. Also, leave us a rating on iTunes. Thank you to the guy who said we are now part of his everyday drive to work in the recent iTunes review. You can get us every other social media at Review Time. We have got a few episodes to go until our big 50th episode special, so make sure to stay tuned for that. Episode 2 of Universal Studios Japan coming next week. We'll see you then.
See ya!
Review Time's theme podcast is brought to you by Luke Carroll and Dominic Lacey. A big shout out goes to our newest patron, Alex Haffenden Blandemer, long-term Patreon, Kelsey Acannon, and to you, the listener. Review Time's theme podcast will be back next week.